Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to It's Rainmaking Time. This is Kim Greenhouse. It gives me great pleasure to bring forth Mireille Giuliano, the author of French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure. She's also the author of French Women Don't Get Fat Cookbook, Women Work and the Art of Savoir-Faire, and French Women for All Seasons. She has literally turned the tides on our understanding of food, wine, champagne, eating, and she is bringing joie de vivre and sensual culture back to women across the world. She is bringing romance to people that have forgotten it or lost it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Mireille Giuliano to It's Rainmaking Time. Good evening. Bonjour.
Bonjour and merci.
It is my pleasure. Je m'appelle Kim Maison Verte.
Oui, je m'appelle Mireille, ou bien Mireillot in Provençal, which means sun ray.
Beautiful.
Sunbeam. So joie de vivre is easy for me. I live it every day.
You can tell that you live it. And I actually saw on your website that you said you were retired. This doesn't look like retirement to me.
No, I wouldn't use that term. I think someone said it.
Or... Did they say that you were retired? I think there was quotes around it, like a joke, maybe.
No, it was, I mean, from corporate life, I took an early retirement, but it was to follow, you know, my third act. And I certainly don't feel that I work much less than full-time, but a little bit less and differently. Anyway, I now have an inbox that I can control, and I don't have to do all these awful presentations with figures and statistics and numbers, which is not my cup of tea at all.
And yet, you were the spokesperson for Champagne Veuve Clicquot.
Yes.
And you were there 20 years as a president and CEO. I imagine your joie de vivre increased when you left.
Well, if there were lots of, like in any jobs, there were lots of fun things to do. I love to lecture and host dinners and make food and wine presentation and talk about culture. But I didn't like the admin part of it, the human resource part of it, the hassles and the stuff that a CEO has to deal with and you know, it has to be done. But I guess that's true about any job. You know, there's no perfect job and you have to make the best of it. But generally speaking, I was very passionate and loved building a brand, basically, was what really excited me to do.
I've never been a champagne drinker, but I have to tell you, when I went on Facebook and I watched you pour champagne and teach us how to drink it, I became interested in it.
It's contagious, isn't it?
It really, I'm telling you, it became very contagious.
It's very good for you, of course, in moderation, but a glass of champagne has, I talk a lot about all the benefits in my books. And in French culture, a glass of wine is, you know, wine is food for us. It's part of the meal. It's an element of the meal. So it's like a piece of bread or a piece of fruit. It's just, you know, a little section that complements the meal and gives you more pleasure.
This book, it's in 37 languages already. Every woman in the world should read it. This really should become almost a movement because this would bring back romance. This would bring back fun and pleasure. There's so many things about your book, French Women Don't Get Fat. One of them that you said is, you said French women have a balanced and time-tested relationship to food and life. That's really true.
Yes, and it, you know, I just spent another summer in Provence now that I have more time. And I see it over and over, although things are changing like everywhere else. We still have this quality of life that is really unique to France. And it's just marvelous to how... it has an impact on your day, on your mood, on your family, on your friends, on the way you feel and the way you behave and the way you act. And, you know, I mean, it's part of the whole holistic concept about the French lifestyle.
And you say also that the French don't talk about diets, only what you enjoy, feelings, family, hobbies, philosophies, politics, culture, food.
Well, you know, we deal. I mean, we are like every woman in the developed world. Some of us have to do a few tricks, but we don't talk about it because, first of all, it's boring to others, and we certainly never mention it to our men, you know. But we do what we have to do, you know. We work on compromises and compensations, but without depriving ourselves. And we know how to enjoy a meal. Let's say last night I met friends for dinner and we had wine and bread and cheese. And I'm not going to say, oh, no, I can't eat this, or, oh, you know, this is too fattening. No, I enjoy it. And the next day, guess what? I'm not going to have two croissants for breakfast. I'll have a yogurt, you know. So it's the French woman who is good at being bien dans sa peau knows how to manage her relationship with food and how to control it in a way, because it's all in the mind, and she knows how to beat the mind and how to look at it on a weekly basis rather than on, you know, going on the scale every morning and seeing that you have 3 ounces too much and you're going to have to starve yourself. So it's a different attitude towards food and towards well-being.
And I notice also that people don't grow up dreading to cook. It's part of life.
No, actually, you know, that is the big message and philosophy in my third, in the third part of the Frenchwoman trilogy, the cookbook, which is more than a cookbook. It's really the continuation of the lifestyle. And it's something actually that I learned after writing Frenchwoman Don't Get Fat and lecturing this past 5-6 years, and especially in America, and also a little bit in England and Australia, which are by far the countries with the most overweight and obese people, I was trying to understand why are there so many people with this challenge. And it occurred to me that, especially in America, which is a young country in terms of discovering food, you know, 20 years ago, everybody was eating like
Pop-Tarts and
junk food, yes. But discovering food and different foods and different ways of different culture of food. But most of the people would eat prepared food or restaurant food or junk food. And in most cases, it's not real food unless you go, you know, to a great or very good restaurant. But it's what I call fake food. So people have really no connection to food. You know, they eat something that comes out of a box and that is usually oversalted or oversweet, and that makes you more hungry. And on top of it, you don't eat at the table, so you don't involve your senses. You don't take the time it takes for you to really, you know, make the difference between eating to live and living to eat. When you eat fast, you eat more. And when you learn to eat at the table and, you know, eat slowly and chew well and not multitask, then, you know, your brain needs 20 minutes to send this message, or to get the message that you've eaten enough. And most people, according to surveys and statistics, eat their meals between, you know, 3 minutes and 12 minutes. And that's not enough. So in a way, you're wasting everything. And if on top you're eating the wrong food or the food loaded with not only sugar and salt, but all these, you know, what I call poison, the chemical, the fructose,
corn syrup
and all that, that is not food. That is disguised, you know, poison. So cooking is so, so vital, because cooking connects you to food and it makes you look at food, smell food, prepare food, and then you can involve, you know, your children, your partners, your family, and then you sit down and you share it. And eating at the table is more than just feeding yourself. It's
ritual,
about conviviality,
isn't it?
And it's about, you know, relaxing and sharing and talking, and in the case of children, teaching them the art of conversation, and it's about laughing. And so when you eat a meal like that, you don't gain weight, you know.
I noticed in the book you also said bad eating and drinking grow out of an inattention to our true needs and delights. know and pursue your pleasures. Talk about that.
That is the kind of motif or motto of all my books, is the pleasure factor. You know, I talk a lot, being French, I like a lot of things in three. And, you know, three meals a day, always have meals with what I call the three substances, protein, carb, and fat, you know, which means right away no diet, because most diets eliminate some. You know, it's the no carb diet or no this diet. And, of course, if you deprive yourself, you're going to lose a lot of weight, but it's temporary. And then your body is going to take revenge, and it's going to be worse in most cases. But in the three P's, I have words like pleasure, portion, and planning. And the pleasure factor, of course, means that something that you have, it's not an art, it's a habit. And so you need to practice. And in our society, especially the 21st century trap of haste, we don't take time, you know, and so the pleasure factor doesn't even exist. And cooking gives you so many pleasure, small pleasure, that is amazing. And, you know, when I wrote the cookbook, I had developed what I do at the end of each book, a kind of a list of definition of what cooking is, and I came up with like 39 or 40 definitions. And since then, I've come up with another 50, you know, and I'm saying,
you're like a creativity.
There are so many things in the world that give you so many pleasures. And everyone who reads the book should add their own, you know. I think cooking connects you to food, and then you have to commit yourself to another way of feeding yourself. You only have one body, and you should respect it. And by eating, you know, all this junk food, or overeating, or binging, or eating all this kind of prepared, unnatural food, you're abusing, in a way, your body. And I'm trying to tell you that, you know, you can change overnight, but you can do a few steps at a time. And certainly my first book gives you lots of tips, and as I said to a woman last night at a lecture, well, you know, you don't have to do the 100 things at once. Start with two or three things that are easy for you, like drinking more water, like going for a walk, like eating yogurt, which burns fat cells, and then add them up as you go, you know. And that's the feedback I get from the last 6 years of women who have succeeded not only in losing the weight, but in maintaining their new weight and their new lifestyle, and telling me, you know, how I changed their life and how they've discovered, you know, eating with their senses, eating with pleasure, and all that joy that kind of comes out, you know, and that they can, it's contagious, and people around them, from family to colleagues, notice them. And then also in the way you look, you know, when you eat well and you drink well and you sleep well, your skin looks better, your hair looks better, you feel better. I mean, I have nothing against, you know, fat people if that's the way they like it, but I can't believe that they can be happy, because I mean, you can't be comfortable, and you can have the energy and the mood that you have when you find yourself fit and healthy. And in our society, we need to make an effort to get, you know, I'm not talking about skinny or anorexic, just normal. And the change is tremendous. I mean, every day when I talk, I have women who come to me and said, you know, I didn't write you, but this is my picture before 5 years ago, and I lost, you know, 30, 40 pounds, and I'm just such a different person. And I, you know, and I said, well, I'm glad, but I'm not surprised, because I know, been there, done that.
I loved how you shared that in the book, and I loved that you share about the little changes that are made make a big difference in the long run, and that these incremental changes that, and even keeping a food log, I thought was great. And I've heard about that, actually.
Well, that's one of the key elements at the beginning, because, and I see it from my email, women would write to me and say, oh my God, you know, I never realized what I eat in a day. Because a lot of, especially women, we eat too many times for the wrong reason. And they're mostly psychological, you know, it's all in our head. It's because we are tired or stressed or frustrated or unhappy or, I mean, all of the above. And very rarely is it because we're really hungry. And so, you know, when I see people who tell me they eat 6-8 meals a day, I say, wait a minute. Write, when you write what you eat, write also where you ate.
And what time.
What you eat, why you ate, and how much you ate. And, you know, they're bright women. They figure it out when they read it. They don't need to do it for 6 years. After a few weeks, it comes out in the journal. What is it? Why you eat when you eat and you really don't need to eat. And the three meals are very important, but, you know, in the cookbook I have, well, in French Women Don't Get Fat, I talk about, you know, the leek broth and the soups and many things that are very good for you to lose weight. But in the cookbook, I really have a magical recipe, and that's a breakfast recipe. And I have so many emails, and I'm so happy about that because I've even convinced not only women but men, children, who didn't eat breakfast, and unfortunately too many people don't eat breakfast, to now eat breakfast because that breakfast is addictive. It is so yummy, but it is so easy, so quick to make, and so delicious that, but it has everything. It has carbs, protein, and fat. And it's so good for you that you will have a morning where you'll have great energy and you won't be hungry until like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, people who discover that just like are amazed that, you know, what food can do to your mood, to your everything.
Now I have in my possession French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure, and also French Women for All Seasons, A Year of Secrets, Recipes, and Pleasure. I don't have the cookbook then, but you have a lot of recipes in both.
Oh, things. Well, yes, the cookbook is actually, I certainly didn't plan to write a cookbook, but many of my fans, the first one, French Women Don't Get Fat, had 50 recipes. The second one, French Women for All Seasons, at 100. What they had in common was that they were based on a few ingredients, very easy to make, quick, 30 minutes or less, and not expensive. And so a lot of young women who never knew how to cook discovered that cooking was not so hard after all and not intimidating. And they begged for more recipes. And finally, I said, well, you know, with what I've learned, I can easily put some recipe together. So I looked, I mean, I could have, you know, with all the boxes of recipes I have, I could write a dozen cookbooks, but I wouldn't. But what I did was I sorted out 150 new recipes, and they're mostly from my life in Provence and my family, but the easy and the quick ones. And they are based on easy cooking because, you know, when you cook a lot, a long time, you can, and it's some dishes are wonderful when they're cooked a lot, like beef bourguignon, of course, but you don't eat this every day. But on a daily basis, it's much better for you to steam the vegetables and or the fish or to eat it en papillote in a foil. And in the cookbook, I have 150 recipes, and many, all of them actually are done same way in 30 minutes or less. But I picked recipes for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner. But I also have a chapter about eat your fish and vegetables, because I think they are very important, and you don't have to eat, you know, a pound of fish. And you can prepare in advance and put everything in a little foil, your two vegetables, a little lemon juice, oil, your fish, whatever your fish is, some herbs, and then, you know, close the foil, put it in the fridge. And the next night when you come home for, you put it in the oven for 12 minutes and your whole meal is cooked. You have no pots to clean and you have everything in that pouch. And cooking au papillote is really something that my American fans, especially because we do it a lot in France, have discovered and realized how easy it is. So you really have no excuse for cooking.
I love also the part where you say shop on a need to eat basis. I think this is another key. There were so many keys in the book because a lot of people shop for the week. I shop on a need to eat basis every other day.
Yes, it's important because, and you see it, you know, I visited many homes in different countries. And when I see the waste in people's fridge, I mean, you know, vegetables, they don't keep their vitamins and they're not fresh. If you've, some people say, oh, you know, I go to the supermarket twice a month and I'm like, you know, I would throw that in the garbage. And today there's so many markets. I'm here today in San Francisco and just down the street, there's a farmer's market. And, you know, I went there and probably bought my last raspberries of the season. But, you know, they were cut, they were picked this morning or yesterday. They're fresh, they're good. And they had all these vegetables, cabbages and bok choy and all kinds of potatoes and greens and all kinds of, a dozen types of tomatoes. And this is the food people should eat. And you don't need to eat a lot of food. So you can save, you know, people think that cheap food is cheap. Well, it is cheap, and it's also volume, but it's also mostly bad. And you're much better off buying, you know, small portions and trying to buy better food and fresh food. Cost a little bit more, it seems, but once you learn how to eat and how to enjoy, you will eat much less because, you know, nobody needs this kind of 3,000-5,000 calories a day that so many people eat. I mean, I watch people at terraces of restaurants today, and I couldn't believe the portions. It's just like not, you know, the food industry and television has tried to convince people what a portion is, and it's three times what a normal portion is. So we have to re-educate people and children to eat, you know, small quality and enough vegetables and fruit, which are so, so vital to your health.
Speaking of children, so many children in America don't know how to cook, don't know how to prepare food, don't know how to select food from, let's say, an open-air market, or how to find an open-air market with their family.
No, I know. You know, I was, in one of the book, I describe how I was with a television team in New York at the Union Square Market, and we were asking kids, showing them an apple, and they didn't know what it was, but they knew apple pie from McDonald's. That's what I mean by no connection with food. You see, this is not where you start. So first, these kids have to touch the apple, smell it, and eat a fresh apple.
How do you feel about the genetically modified foods?
Well, of course, you know, I'm French, so I'm against it. We fight for it.
Thank God. Thank God you're fighting to keep it out.
Even if some people said, you know, we don't really know yet if it's that bad or whatever. But let's grow real food, you know.
Exactly.
Good soil and good weather. And we're so lucky we live in countries where there's plenty of good reasons to have good farming. And let's not just produce all this fake types of food.
The farmers markets now are becoming a little bit more prevalent in California.
Yeah, everywhere. I mean, there are now something like 4,000 markets in the U.S. I mean, I know it's not enough, but it's huge from, you know, 20 years ago when I arrived and people didn't even know what a market was until they went to France. And in France, we just couldn't, you know, every town you go, I mean, in Paris included, you wouldn't even think of not going to the market at least a couple of times a week.
And the open-air markets, that's the basic type of market there in Provence and Paris? They're
yes,
open-air.
But now they're doing, you know, the farmers are doing even better. And I think it's starting in the U.S. as well. But in France, there's this this panier, which means a basket. And even in Paris, you have points of delivery where the farmers, instead of selling to the supermarket or hypermarket, because, you know, they keep their food for 1 or 2 weeks and it's not that fresh either, and also to benefit from, to make a little bit more money, they would, you subscribe to it, and every week you get a basket. And I've seen it with a young friend. It's a wonderful formula because, on one hand, it obliges you to be creative, because you don't know what you're going to get. You're going to get for 15 euro or 20 euro, about $20, a basket filled of vegetable and food of whatever the farmer has ready that week. And so, you know, it's kind of a surprise. I mean, obviously the seasons, you know, more or less, but you don't know this week if you're going to get carrots or leeks or what. And my friends say that, you know, the children get very excited and love to look up for recipe and play with that. And I think it's a wonderful formula. And that way the farmer delivers it to a center and you come and pick it up. And it's it's very good value, of course, because if you had to pay for that food in a supermarket, you'd probably get a third of it. And it's great for the farmers as well. So I hope it develops, and I hope people, you know, take the time to go and do it.
On page 77 of French Women Don't Get Fat, you say, what's a luxury to Americans is often a necessity to the French.
Yes, yes, yes.
Explain that to the audience. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, you know, we're very demanding for our food. And so we don't think that having the quality and having the freshness and all that is a luxury. It's like normal to us, because of course we've had, you know, a few hundred years of gastronomy, and we are a country rich, although it's decreasing now, but we've always had lots of farms and freshness locally, so that, you know, even in Provence, I mean, many things that, you know, I ate in my little village, like the cheese from the farm around the corner, doesn't get even to Paris because he doesn't make enough. You know, so he sells it to a few stores and the market, and that's it. So people come from New York or London or, you know, and they think this is a luxury. But we said, well, no, it's something that we feel it's part of our life. And, you know, we want it there. We want to continue that. So we support the farmers, even if it means, and it's true that French people spend much more a month on food than any other culture in the developed countries.
I never knew that.
Oh yeah, yeah. For us, it's you know, we'll rather have good bread, glass of wine, and all that than buy ourselves, you know, another bag or another belt or whatever. It's eating is just, as I said, too many pleasures. It's part of our life, and it's very, very important for our families. So good food is a necessity.
And you also say that every meal is actually special, and cooking is a part of the culture.
Yes, and you know, we don't waste. Like I think in so many places you see so much food wasted. And first of all, we eat much smaller portions, but we don't waste anything, you know. And like some of my guests sometimes are surprised that, you know, at the end of the day, I don't throw away the baguette. I slice it and I freeze it, and the next morning I toast them and they have toasted bread. And they say, well, that's like stale bread from yesterday. I said, yes, and it's good for you. First of all, it's more digestible, toasted. And I wouldn't throw bread. It's something very precious. You know, we don't, and that probably comes from, you know, our parents who went through the war, and you know, there's a history to a connection to all these rituals, of course.
Talk a little bit about your family, but whatever you're comfortable with.
Yes, well, my family in many ways was even more obsessed than the normal French family, because my grandmother had a restaurant. She had six sisters who love to cook, and was they were always competing on who made the best quiche Lorraine and who made the best crumb cake and all that. And then my mother loved to cook, of course. My uncle on my father's side was a chef and had a spa and restaurant in the south of France. So as a teenager, I grew up in this environment with, of course, a huge garden with everything fresh from carrots and radishes to raspberries. We had a hazelnut tree, a walnut tree, bushes of blackberries, raspberries. We had a whole field of strawberries. And then in the south of France, when I'd visit my uncle's family, we had, he made everything fresh at the restaurant. It was amazing. And I grew up being very spoiled and not kind of knowing it, that we always had fresh food, homemade food, wonderful soups. And I was very privileged, and the same during the summer at the farmhouse that my grandmother had in Alsace. Everything was fresh, the milk, she would make butter and goat cheese and everything. And it spoils you for the rest of your life, I think.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Sometimes when I eat something, at a restaurant, I said, this is not fresh. And people look at me like, what? I said, no, this is not fresh. Look at this salad. This shows it's like 3 days old. Or I can tell you it's, and they're like stunned. I said, well, I grew up picking it up. So I know how it is when it's fresh, And in Provence during the summer when I have people from all over the world coming and visiting and, eating a peach that was picked ripe from the tree 2 hours before is an experience that cannot be explained. It can only be tasted, It just changes the way you taste food and you look at food and you respect food, which is very, very important. In my family, I would say that my mother, not only we wouldn't waste food, and we had never had second servings. It was, the meal was prepared, and we had what she thought was the portion we needed, and no snacks in between. But we were never deprived of a dessert or, a piece of chocolate or things like that. And we learned to drink wine with a little bit of water, as young kids. Lots of water, actually. But, all these things to make it natural so that, when you turn 16 or 18, you don't feel like you have to do it and get drunk and all that. And it became part of a natural thing that you have, your parents have with your meal. And at a certain age, you can have a little bit you too. So all these rituals were very, very important. And, looking back as an adult, it makes me realize how, and that's why I preach a lot to young mothers. And I said, you deserve to cook for your children because, when they grow up, you don't want them to remember dinner is my mother, on a couch eating a pizza out of a box and watching television. Because even if kids are being educated at school and more they will need to, but it's not enough if they come home and they see the other extreme, because mothers are role models. And so a child doesn't know the difference. And if he sees his mother eating that way, he thinks this is what dinner is. So it sets confusion and a lot of bad habits into children. The same way, and I see, French people are much more demanding with their kids, eating in their room while doing video games or on their PC. No, you eat at the table, and there's no television, and there's no PC, and there's no cell phone. And I think it's important, even if for the child it could be, especially the teenager, it could be a pain in the neck, but there are a few values that you need to instill so that the children can grow healthy and pick up a few good habits.
There's a lot that gets transmitted at the table that isn't even
tremendous.
Spoken, and it's internalized. And if there's no space created for it, it won't happen.
Absolutely.
I love the part about drinking water. You know, it sounds so obvious, but there's been 30-year studies on water.
Yes. And every day you read another report contradicting the other one. The fact is, I spoke to many friends, doctors in France. And, you know, it's, again, each of us is unique. And, for example, I said, you know, generally speaking, you need to be hydrated. When you get up in the morning, the first thing you must do is drink a glass of water. Because what happened during the night, you get dehydrated. You sweat. You lose so much. You're like a dry sponge. And think about putting some water on a sponge. What happened, right? It swells, it blooms. Same with us. So you start like that. And then during the day, you should have a glass of water every couple of hours. And, of course, if you exercise or if you travel, you need to add much more. I mean, I am not in the plane, and I can't tell you that. I drink another liter of extra water. I really need it. So we need to be very hydrated, very, very important for the body, especially for women with their skin and hair, and it will make a difference when your body will tell you how much water you need, you know, and it's essential. And, of course, children today, unfortunately, drink too much soda, and they think, well, it's liquid, yes, but it's not the water. Or people who say to me, oh, I drink plenty of coffee or tea. And I say, well, actually, if you drink coffee or tea,
you need more water.
They have caffeine and they dehydrate. So you need even more water. You know, so they don't realize all that. So there's a lot of education to be made and you know, to facts to explain, very simple ones, why you need to be hydrated and how important it is.
Do you know of an area in France called Delévant outside of Paris? It's about an hour, I think it's south of Paris. Delévant?
Spell it.
I don't know how to spell it. Thich Nhat Hanh, who is a Buddhist master,
yeah,
who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, teaches about breathing.
Oh, yeah.
Plum Village.
We have quite a few places.
Yes.
I mean, the French are big on that. There are a couple of places around Paris, which I don't know about, but there are also quite a few places in my neck of the wood in Provence and between Provence and Lyon. And they're wonderful areas where you go and it's, you know, in the forest or the mountain and great and has more and more French young people who are into it.
Learning how to breathe.
Yes.
You talk about finding this place of contentment, about being able to taste flavors. You even gave an example that most of us would, let's say, use balsamic vinegar in a salad. And yet, what we think we're tasting isn't true balsamic vinegar. Talk about that.
Well, you know, balsamic vinegar, when it's the real thing, is expensive because it's aged for a long time. And so it the flavor comes, it's like old wine, you know, it comes from the aging. And so it's expensive. And unfortunately, it became fad, like many things in restaurant, and like everybody using it. And they use it on everything, you know, from salad to, I mean, I can't believe the number of dishes where they put balsamic, you know. And most of it is just stuff mixed with caramel or all kinds of things. I wouldn't even want to know what's in there. But it's not vinegar. It's sugar.
Where do we buy true balsamic vinegar? Or what should we think about? Where do we find it?
Well, you have to look at the bottle. You know, it's like a label like in France with the AOC. There's an origin, and true balsamic comes from Modena, and it will be written on the label, and it will cost a lot of money, and you will need like just a drop of it, not, you know, like what you have in restaurant. Actually, it happened to me yesterday. I order salmon on a brioche, and it came with some green, and it was covered with this brown stuff. And I said to the waiter, excuse me, is this balsamic? And he said, yes. And I said, well, this was not written on the dish. Is it possible to have one without? He said, oh, no problem. He went back. He took the salad, threw the salad away, and brought me just some fresh salad and some olive oil. And I'm like, why would they put this stuff and ruin a perfectly little, you know, dish with that? And I don't know why this became so stylish, but you know, I do my little education by talking about it and alerting people that they don't need it and they shouldn't have it because it's just not so good for you. It's another thing that you know has a lot of sugar, so it makes you hungrier and you eat more. You know, the food industry doesn't care what they do to us. They know perfectly well that they poison us. They just want us to buy more, eat more, and it's all about consumption and money. It's a big commerce. So there are lots of items like that one doesn't need. Well, you know, the soda is, I've shown a few friends, you know, to read the label on soda, and I say, you don't want to put this in your body, for heaven's sake.
When somebody like you has such refined, developed tastes over a long period of time, I would imagine even your taste buds are different because your palate is trained to really taste versus to eat things which mask the taste.
Yeah.
And which almost mute the ability of the tongue to taste what's really there.
Yes, yes. I mean, many people, because they eat that type of food, you know, if they close their eyes, and I know that surveys have been made, they wouldn't even know what they eat.
That would be because, frightening.
No, they wouldn't.
That would be rather frightening, don't you think?
Well, but it is because it's not real food, and it's produced to make you, you know, to make you eat something very salty, and the salt covers the poor quality of what it is.
Are you a big proponent of natural sea salt, real sea salt?
Yes, and you need so little of it. You know, it's like the real balsamic. It's so powerful. It's like, you know, garlic. I mean, all those TV shows when they think it's funny to say, add more. You don't need much garlic in a dish to get the flavor. Just a little bit. You know, it's all about moderation. And unfortunately, we are a culture of extremes. You know, it's much more, a lot of it. It's like, you know, you don't need to drink a bottle of wine with your meal. Actually, if you do that, you negate all the positive effects. It's a glass that makes a difference, not a bottle. You know, your body, or, you know, you don't, same way that you don't need to eat a loaf of bread. One slice of bread is all you need. So it's teaching the art of moderation to people, which is a whole huge education challenge because, again, it's what they see on TV, it's what they see in movies, it's what the food industry has promoted. I mean, look at today if you want to go and buy a muffin. You know, near my home in New York, there's a gym, and it always makes me laugh when I walk by in the morning. So these people have just spent 1 hour in the treadmill. Oh, how horrible. On this machine. And then they go to this coffee shop and eat a muffin that is about 6 ounces. Now, 6 ounces, that's like 6 slices of bread, except, you know, good bread would be much better because in that muffin you have some kind of lots of fat, lots of sugar, who knows what else. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. And who needs to eat such a huge muffin? And, you know, I was showing that to a friend. She said, oh, you know, my mother used to bake muffin in New England, and they were about a third of the size of this. And so basically in the last 20 years, the food industry has managed to convince people that a portion is 3 times a portion. And so we need to go backwards. And you know, and then there's so much waste.
What about those croissants, those French croissants?
Well, those croissants too, you know, people have a funny way of, you know, they think French people eat croissant every morning. I don't know any of my French friends who eat croissant every morning. Croissant is like a special treat, you know, maybe on the weekend, maybe, you know, a couple of times a week, but not more. And it's one croissant, and we eat it sitting down. It's our breakfast. And first, croissant in France weigh much less. I mean, croissant in America are huge, huge. again, you know, the portion. And now in France, they even make all those mini croissants, which are great. They weigh about 1 ounce. And that's really what you need. It's one slice of bread. And they're wonderful, you know, but it's butter and it's all carb and, you don't need it every day. So try to balance it. You know, there's nothing more boring than eating the same stuff every day. So eat a yogurt one day, an egg another day, a croissant one day, but eat one and eat it slowly and really take pleasure of it. When I was interviewed on Oprah, she was telling how she loves to go to Paris and eat croissant. And she said, oh, you're telling me about portion. I could eat six. And I said, well, you know, how was your last croissant? She said, well, I waited the last day, but I was, you know, I ate it on my way to the airport. And, you know, she gulped it down in 30 seconds. Well, that's not the way to eat. You see, that's not pleasure.
I'll bet she is having pleasure on other levels. Something about what she's doing is right, but maybe you can teach her how to eat a croissant. Are you doing seminars at all in Provence?
No, I have done a few lectures, you know, last summer through friends who have art exhibitions and invite people. But I'm working on some projects, but not there.
Anything you can share with us what you're working on right now?
Well, not quite. Okay. I will when it's, you know, it's in the pipeline.
Yeah.
I'm doing something with Japan because Japan in many ways is a culture, at least as far as food is concerned, very, very close to the French culture. And so, I will be doing something with Japan next year. And, I might be doing something between France and England for something French that I like a lot.
Wonderful. It sounds very mysterious. We're waiting to hear, and we're excited to hear when we're allowed to hear. Two last things. The sweet almonds that you had in Greece that you went crazy for.
Yes.
You know what they're doing to almonds in the United States? They're pasteurizing them. It's terrible.
I know. And, you know, in Provence, my guest, I mean, we have the harvest of almonds, and many you can just, you know, pick them up along the streets, along the roads, fresh almonds. And I had many, many people from the U.S., from England, from Italy, who had never tasted fresh almonds, who did last summer. And it was a wow moment because the almond, you know, when it's fresh, it's in that green shell and it doesn't have the brown shell yet. And it's so sweet and so incredible. And, you know, there's a great French chef, Alain Ducasse, who makes a little vegetable broth with some fresh vegetables in it. And when those fresh almonds are in season, because he has a couple of restaurants in Provence, put a few fresh almonds in there. And if you have that dish, you tasting a fresh almond is like an incredible experience.
You've been all over the world, haven't you?
Not quite, but I've been lucky to go to quite a few places.
Quite a few places. And you said your favorite yogurt dish was in Crete.
Yes, yes.
Can you teach us how to do that dish?
Yes, actually, I have a recipe in my book. You know, yogurt is actually very, very, like ricotta, very easy and inexpensive to make. Because to make yogurt, all you need is a quart of milk and some culture, or you can take a tablespoon of a very good plain yogurt. And all you have to do is bring the milk to a boil, add the culture, put your thermometer in there that comes with a machine that tells you when you have to add the culture. You mix it, you put it in those little jars, and you plug it in. And if you like your yogurt very liquid, you plug it in 6-7 hours. If you like it more solid, like I do, you plug it in 8-9 hours, and that's it. And so you get 6 or 8 yogurts, depending on your machine, for the price of one. So it's a huge savings. And ricotta is the same. You know, my Italian friends learn to make ricotta from me. Because in you know, like a French woman wouldn't make a croissant, an Italian woman wouldn't make a ricotta because the ricotta is so good in Italy and it's made fresh everywhere, every day. But ricotta is so expensive in this country, and it's so easy to make. All you do, same thing. You boil the milk with either, I like it with lemon juice, but you can make it with vinegar as well. And then you let it simmer a little bit, and it curdles and makes the ricotta. And it's, you know, you can put it on fresh pasta. You can use it as breakfast dish. It's so wonderful and so inexpensive to make. So it's, again, going back to the kitchen and cook.
Do you miss being the CEO and the president of the champagne company?
Not a bit. I have to be sincere. I'm even surprised myself because I did love my job and my team and my customers and friends and everything. But I don't. It's amazing how life is lived in stages and episodes. And, you know, it's like a book. You turn the page and you go to the next chapter and that's it.
I used to be a tournament tennis player for 13 years, and people who know about it often ask me, don't you miss it?
Yes.
And I have to say, I don't. I can tell you all kinds of incredible stories of wisdom and lessons learned and things that happen and some of the fascinating people I got a chance to learn from and work with, but I don't miss it one second, except from time to time I like to watch it, like I just watched the Open.
Yeah.
But I don't miss the game.
Yeah. No, I must say I was surprised because when I decided, I made the choice that, you know, I couldn't do both. Many of my friends, I belong to a group of women called the Committee of 200, many, you know, top women entrepreneur in the U.S. and top businesswomen said, oh, you'll see, you'll get depressed, you'll miss your title, your status, your this, your that. Not a bit, not a second. I just, I'm really amazed sometimes that I spent so many years, you know, living, drinking and eating it every day, and that it just another stage of life, you know.
I think that's great, and that goes to show you that this is part of your destiny.
And I'm glad I wouldn't, you know, I don't know what depression is, but I've seen depressed people, and I'm glad I didn't have to go through that.
You have a joie de vivre about you, and I noticed that you're definitely transmitting that excitement, that real essence of what joie de vivre really is.
Well, I try to. I think, you know, my other three letters, you know, are the three L, love, leisure, and laughter. And, you know, someone said, if you have love and laughter in your life, that's great. But if you have one of them, it's pretty good, you know, but if you have both, it's great. And I'll add to that the leisure part, which to me, in a way, writing books and talking and educating is a kind of leisure. So I'm a very lucky woman. Another L.
You are recognized as the ambassador of France and its art of living by the French daily. Is it Le Figaro?
Yes, well, you know.
And USA Daily dubbed you as the High Priestess of French Lady Wisdom. Those are pretty high titles there. You are ministering to something very important.
I know. Someone just sent me an email recently that when I was in town for a talk at the London Business School, a journalist from the BBC interviewed me, and she wrote something that... Mireille Giuliano in person is a sort of Jamie Oliver à la Française, youthfully easygoing, funny, and uncommonly likable. And I thought, wow! So, you know, it's she had a good time with me and it was contagious. But I have to say I enjoy life. I think life is, every day we're very lucky and I want to make the most of it, and I think it's important to share it with people and to try to help them or give them tips to enjoy life better, because life is beautiful and we only have one, so why shouldn't we do our best to make the best of it?
Ladies and gentlemen, we have had the pleasure of speaking with, listening to, and learning from Mireille Juliano, author of the number one national bestseller, French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure, French Women for All Seasons, A Year of Secrets, Recipes and Pleasure, also a recipe book that has just come out. You can find out more about her and her body of work at FrenchWomenDon'tGetFat.com and also at Mireille Juliano,
yes.
MireilleGuilano. And I'm really honored and delighted to have you on the show. And I hope to have you back because I want to read the cookbook. I want to read the cookbook because I got the first two down, but I want to read that cookbook. And I'm really delighted what you're doing. And I'm so excited because French Women Don't Get Fat, The Secret of Eating for Pleasure, actually is delivering way more than we even got a chance to talk about today. It's huge. It's a paradigm shift about joy. And you've been a joy to have on the show. Thank you so much, Mireille.
Well, merci, Kim. It was a real pleasure. And I look forward to sharing a glass of bubbly and a good meal with you someday.
That would be lovely, in a great celebration spirit.
That would be wonderful.
Thank you so much.